The Mutual Broadcasting System presents STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. With today's briefing, here is retired Marine Intelligence Officer, Lieutenant Colonel Hal Kempfer.
Welcome to STRAT and our Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Today is going to talk about the growing problem here in the homeland. We've certainly talked about it a lot all over the world. It's a problem for the military here at home. It's public safety, large venue security. That is the exponential usage, growth, utilization of drones, unmanned systems. I'm really going to focus mostly on unmanned aerial system, or what are sometimes called UASs. And when I say drones, a lot of people just automatically think it's stuff that flies, but actually drones can be kind of ubiquitous. For you have drones that float, drones that, you know, can go underwater, drones that roll across the land. But these, I'm going to talk primarily about the flying drones, all right? And I'm going to talk about some things you may not be aware of. A little news item. According to the deputy commander of U.S. Northern Command, NORTHCOM, and the North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD, which are joined at the hip up in Colorado Springs, in Colorado, kind of a two parts of the same headquarters, if you will, and I should mention they're jointly run by the U.S. and Canada, and the Canadians are very much ensconced up there, that we don't have the necessary sensors that we need to deal with the modern threat posed by drones. And I think it's a nice way of saying just how far behind the power curve we are. You know, inexpensive drones, they're proliferating across the battle space, if you will, around the world. But they're a real threat here in the homeland. And swarms of drones launched from inside U.S. borders, rather than thinking about traditional ballistic missiles and things like that approaching from 1,000 miles away, these are big considerations that they're having up at NORAD and NORTHCOM because of what's going on. And you may recall, it wasn't that long ago, we were talking about all these mysterious drones that were flying across military bases and cities and stuff all across the U.S. Turned out to be another reason why, but it did bring up a real vulnerability, which is just how these drones could get into all sorts of spaces and places that we hadn't really thought that much about. All right. This is the person I'm talking about, Army Lieutenant General Joseph Jared. He's the deputy commander of NORTHCOM and the vice commander of NORAD. He says, you know, determining where a drone swarm is going to attack really depends on sensors. And, you know, it's one of these things. A lot of times everybody gets caught up in the kinetics. Like, oh, we have to have a drone that's going to go out and intercept that drone. Okay, that's fine. But if you can't find that drone, if you don't even know if that drone's there, then how do you plan to intercept it? So it really gets into the sensor systems. All right. And he was kind of bringing up the fact we just don't have enough of those things. We're just not where we need to be. Now, he said he didn't discount the importance of intercept capability with drones, but he said, look, you have to be able to see where they are. And this is something the Ukrainians have been working with a lot. When you get out to the Ukrainian, particularly on the, you know, the battlefield, if you will, the battle space, the front lines, they have a very complex, multifaceted system for detecting drones. Obviously, traditional radar, but they also have a variety of acoustic systems that listen for the distinctive signature of a drone coming in, visual, everything, infrared, all this stuff that looks for drones coming in, and it's layered and it feeds into each other to get them closer and closer to where the drones are and where the drones are going. And that's where that's how they employ their, very precious drone intercept capabilities. Now, he was doing this at a speech of the Space and Missile Defense Symposium. This was organized by the National Defense Industrial Association's chapter in the Tennessee Valley. And if you know anything about the Tennessee Valley, that's where all that nuclear stuff was way back when, the, Manhattan Project and things. I have done homeland security training in the Tennessee Valley, working with the Tennessee Valley Authority on stuff like that. So I'm a little bit familiar with that area. Now, counter UAS, again, unmanned aerial systems, counter drone. It's an integral part of NORTHCOM's mission. All right. And the threat's really growing fast. I should mention that my last tour on you know, in uniform with the Marine Corps was I was owned by the Marine Corps Component Command of U.S. Northern Command, but I worked in a very joint civil-military setting at all times. It was very much a joint service, multiple services all working together collaboratively on various different things. I have been to NORTHCOM multiple times on multiple occasions. I have, you know, been to meetings there in Colorado Springs. I'm very familiar with it. I've been up to Cheyenne Mountain. So I'm very familiar with what they do there and what they have been doing there traditionally. And so he was just making it very clear that, look, this is part of our mission. This is what we do. And I just want to make it clear, I've been very much. Now, I've been teaching drone seminars to all sorts of folks, public safety, critical infrastructure, private sector, for years, going back well before COVID, before the pandemic, in a variety of different settings and locations, to include in person, online, and have been talking about this growing threat for quite some time. So I kind of understand where this is coming from. And many of you may recall that I also have a background in counter drug intelligence, working with the high intensity drug trafficking area program. So I'm kind of familiar with drug smuggling groups. And of course, all the work I've done with terrorism, counterterrorism programs and stuff. So when I talk about these things and what can happen, I'm not just pulling this out of nowhere. I'm not just pulling this out of stuff I read. I've got some firsthand experience I'm kind of bringing into this as well with what I've done. And that's just kind of my background and what I'm all about. But, you know, my work with the drones on the military side literally goes back to the 1980s, which we didn't have a lot of drones back then. And obviously, technology, the times, everything has changed in dramatically since then. But it's just one of those things. You know, it's happening. It's happening in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of it don't realize this. You may have seen some recent articles that an Army brigade was up against a Ukrainian tactical element that employed some of the latest drone tactics and technology that they're using in the battlefield of Russia. And frankly, the U.S. Army Brigade had a really tough time. And it brought up real questions about their structure, about their command and control, certainly about things, you know, like armor and all sorts of things they were employing, because they realized just how vulnerable they were, which is something certainly the Russians have realized how vulnerable they are to this, what's happening with drones on the modern battlefield. Now, to the Army's credit, they quickly adapted their tactics. They quickly shifted around. But the thing I would point out is, this is an Army unit that knew it was going to go up against the latest and greatest of what the Ukrainians are doing. They obviously, unless there's something really strange going on, they obviously studied the Ukrainian tactics with drones to get ready for whatever this exercise is. And despite all of that preparation, all of that, you know, focus, they still had a very tough time. And I think there's a lesson here. You know, it's not that the U.S. Army wasn't well versed in what this is. You know, we've had a front row seat watching what's happening in Ukraine, so we're very versed in it. You know, and so this was rather eye opening for all the soldiers involved, of all ranks, and certainly for all the military, as to what happened. And it makes you ask, if one of our best military units is having problems with this type of environment, imagine the struggle that public safety is having. Imagine the struggle that critical infrastructure, private sector, large venue operators are having, just conceptualizing what can happen and how drones can be employed. Now, NORTHCOM was designated in November 2024 as a lead synchronizer for the operation of the Defense Department's Homeland Counter Small Unmanned Aerial Aircraft Systems, which was a big issue. There had been a question for a long period of time, who's in charge of what when it came to drones, and who is kind of going to bring all this stuff together? Well, NORTHCOM has been designated the synchronizer that's supposed to bring all this together, integrating, coordinating the efforts within its area of responsibility. What's this area of responsibility? Well, it's all across North America. So that tells you it's a pretty broad area of responsibility. Through this designation, the command's been preparing a lot of counter-UAS operations, establishing, maintaining response plans, tracking, responding to drone incidents. And this also involves oversight, of installations, military installations within the command, many of which have been overflown by drones on a pretty regular basis. So while this warning, which was just said recently in a very public forum, was out there, Jared's remarks were really not focused on. I have to tell you, I scan the news every day, and to me it jumped out because of who I am and what I do. But to most, I think they probably missed what he was saying. There was stuff happening, obviously, in the Middle East. There was stuff happening up in Europe with Ukraine, Russia, Poland, Germany. Obviously, lots of things happening in the Far East, all over the world. Things happening in South America. So it wasn't one of those things that necessarily jumped up and got everybody's attention right away. And but basically, what he's saying, look, this is a problem. It seems to be growing exponentially. And I would say, from my perspective, it's growing far faster than our plans and ability to counter these potential threats have really caught up. I find in many conversations in many different venues that when I'm talking about this, everybody goes, oh, yeah, yeah, it's a threat. We understand that. But when you say, okay, what have you done to prepare for it? That's where you kind of get this sort of blank look. And honestly, with a lot of things, you know, everybody sits there. I am yet to be an organization who goes, you know, we got too much money for security. You know, I've yet to run to a police department or fire department and goes, our problem is too much funding. That's our problem. We just can't find ways to spend it. That is not an issue that runs up. Everybody's short on money. And so since some of these things fall into what could happen soon, but we're not seeing it right now, there is a sort of a bureaucratic risk-averse way of approaching it, which is, you know, sort of the Missouri show me, which is show me where a big threat like that has happened, and then I'll focus on it. And then, of course, after something bad happens, we all sit there and go, how did we miss the warning signs? How do we not prepare correctly? Why didn't we do this? Why didn't we do that? And I would say that's a leadership problem that really starts at the top, which is if your organization, you need to be asked those questions. If you're the CEO of a large venue, all right, if you're the mayor of a city, if you're the the head of the county board of supervisors or a governor, you need to be asking tough questions, which is, what is a threat? What can happen? What has happened? And what are we going to do to deal with it? And then get in there and exercise those things and find out, will it work? All right. And try to do those as honest as exercises as best you can, because I will tell you that a lot of these exercises get heavily scripted to make it look like the home team always does well. And it's up to the top leaders to kind of, you know, tear back those layers to try and find out where it was overly scripted and what our real capabilities and lack thereof are. Look, drones are being used out there a lot. They're increasingly integrated into firefighting operations worldwide, not just here in the U.S. They're tools that support the crews. They're sources of disruption when flown illegally. Unauthorized drone flying into restricted wildfire areas has caused, or airspace has caused, a lot of problems. They can, you know, when they're there, they can halt firefighting operations altogether. Airdrop operations, which are now ubiquitous. You don't see a fire without airdrops coming in fast, furious, and up front. That wasn't always true. Well, that will stop it if they are there. It can delay containment. If you saw the recent massive fires up around Spokane, Washington, over 40 illegal drone flights were recorded that forced grounding of helicopters, aerial tankers, fixed-wing aircraft, all of that risking ground crew safety and, of course, air crew safety if they're in the air. So all of that was a huge problem. And there are serious legal penalties for illegal drone flying. I mean, they can literally spend up to 5 years in jail, $50,000 fine if they're caught doing that. And recently in Southern California, in the wake of a drone strike, there was some very severe penalties for the person operating the drones. Now, due to drones being relatively cheap, accessible technology, their use by smuggling networks have become one of the most, I hate to say innovative, but that's the only way I can describe it. And honestly, dangerous trends we've seen in modern crime, faring everything from illegal drugs, contrabands, weapons, contraband electronics across international borders. We've seen them flying in and out of prisons all the time, and even over military bases, as was mentioned. Larger drones can literally carry hundreds of pounds of payload. Now, that payload could be drugs. That payload could be explosives. That payload could be something else, you know, for example, some dangerous chemical. And they could use it. And there are, basically drones that fly around and you know, are used for spraying chemicals on agriculture. And certainly one could put a deadly chemical in there and use it for spraying deadly chemicals across a crowd. That's one of the scenarios that's out there. So there's a lot of capabilities that they have. And the question is, how well prepared are we for them? Cities across the U.S. have been kind of adopting this, what's called DFR, Drones as First Responder Program. And this is something I was talking about years ago, and I would just come up against a wall. You know, the first thing when first responders come in is they got to size up the situation. They have to figure out what's going on. And then very quickly, they have to respond, but they also have to call in additional response assets as needed. Now, this has led to some things over the years. For example, if you have an EMS, emergency medical system call that comes in, or medical services call that comes in, the paramedics will be dispatched. But it's very common in a lot of cities, mine's one of them, that an additional truck will be sent in, whether that's a tanker truck or just a conventional, you know, fire truck, or in some cases, even a ladder truck will be sent in. The idea is that they may run into something where they're needed. Well, what that does is in the end of the day, when you're working up the number of responses and number of callouts, and you're trying to justify budget, you're trying to justify overtime, you're trying to justify a lot of things, you have this higher demand for a response. And it's been brought up many times that these other vehicles come in, but they're not necessarily as needed. All right. And that's, you know, but then again, you're going to get some pushback from the firefighters because they want to make sure they get enough budget. They want to make sure that they get enough vehicles, and they don't want to see stuff that potentially could give the city council or the county board supervisor anything, any reason to cut their budgets. So for reasons that have less to do with the response, more to do with budget, a lot of these practices are continuing. And you see some of the stuff we'd see pushback from law enforcement as well. They didn't like the idea of a drone coming in, sizing up the situation, which could limit the number of car or vehicles called out, the amount of response that goes into any particular call, because they too look at the metrics. They too have to justify budget and responses and call out, you know, or whatever, you know, call for service things. And so anyway, it gets very complicated. It gets very political, and there's been a lot of pushback. But the technology is such that you're seeing this, and it changes things. You know, the first response unit in a major city may not get there, ground unit may not get there for 6, 7, sometimes 10 or longer minutes, depending on the size of the city. When you launch these drones, they're usually there within about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and they got eyes on it. They can see stuff. They can have sensors. High definition video can go down to command centers, to dispatchers. They can be streamed into responding officers to give them an idea of what's going on the ground. Obviously, this provides a tremendous amount of situational awareness for everybody involved, but there has been a little bit of reticence to adopt this technology for the reasons I just talked about, you know, and you can understand why. They don't want to see their budgets cut, and nobody wants to be displaced by technology, and that's the potential they see. But whether it's for terrorism, crime, nefarious foreign actors involved with hybrid warfare type stuff, and whether they're doing attacks, operations, or intelligence gathering, whatever it is, drones are here to stay. They're not going anywhere. All right. We're seeing drones everywhere, and they're getting used more and more. Once Amazon has figured this out, their plan is to put drones everywhere doing delivery packages. Their plan is that these trucks will go out, have a bunch of drones in the back, and as they come into a neighborhood, the drone picks up the package, goes to somebody's front door, and drops it off right at the front door. And there's no person that gets out of the truck and goes over to the front door and drops it off. That's their big plan. They've been working on this for years. They're just trying to get everything done to make this happen, you know, and there's talk about drones dropping packages off in people's backyards even. And yes, there are a lot of legal issues on a variety of different levels that have to deal with that, but that's some of the stuff that they're talking about, all right? But every city, county, state, large venue operator, destination location, critical infrastructure site, et cetera, needs to have a counter UAS planning process, counter UAS plans, and they need to prioritize investment and capabilities to deal with these threats. And the question is, you know, are we doing that? And if we're waiting for something to happen, then we're sitting here waiting. We're going to fight the last war. We saw what happened to the Russians, or what's happening to the Russians. They have taken phenomenal losses fighting the last war. And we don't want to see the equivalent of that happening here in the homeland as we wait for the innovation and the threat innovation to be something that the bad guys have while we keep responding to what they did yesterday. So that planning process needs to be a dynamic one. It should not be just a check the box thing. It needs to be something that is planned. It's war gamed. It's tabletop exercised, all this stuff. As Louis Pasteur, the famous scientist, once said, quote, chance favors a prepared mind, unquote. Well, it's long past time that we get serious about preparing for this. This is real. And I think that General Gerard's remarks really need to be taken to heart. And you may say, well, Hal, you're a military guy, so you're obviously leaning towards the military. You used to work with Northcom, and so obviously you're focused on them in ways the rest of us aren't. Hey, look, their role is their role. They're the synchronizer. They've been given that designation, and that's probably a good role for them to have across the board. In the 90s, I worked on counter-drug. Military played a role behind the scenes. A lot of people don't realize, but a lot of it was helping develop a lot of capabilities that have paid great dividends since. So anyway, that's what I wanted to say about drones across the homeland. Thanks for listening to Strat, and please visit stratpodcast.com. You can go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kempfer TV, see a lot of things I do in the news and media, stuff like that. You can also go to our corporate website, www.grips.com. GRIPSA, that's GRIP, Global Risk Intelligence Planning, GRIPSA.com. And if you want to hear more about my assessment of what's happening around the world, I would say go to www.losangelesinfraguard.org, and you can register for the Global Threat Update webinar that is coming up next week on August 18th. And I sure hope to see you as part of that. And again, I hope to see you. Tune in for the next Strat. Thanks.
Strategic Risk Assessment Talk is presented by the Mutual Broadcasting System. Stay informed on the matters we discuss by visiting stratpodcast.com and other sites mentioned by Hal Kempfer. You may interact with the show through our website at stratpodcast.com or through our Facebook social media site. Thank you for joining us.